Welcome back to the Hawkins Reports, a Stranger Things podcast by LSG Media. I'm your host, Dean.
I'm Jessica.
On this week's episode, we're talking Season 2, Chapter 5, Dig Dug. All right, we're back. We're talking Dig Dug. I'm pumped. I know that Jessica's excited to talk about this week's episode. Originally, she had designs of doing a double header, and as she was drawing to an end of Dig Dug, she said, "This episode is very packed. A lot of things are happening. I don't think we can record two." That was a true story, right?
That is 100% a true story. I wanted to try to double down on the episodes tonight and, you know, get stuff moving along, because it's hard to know what days we're going to be able to podcast and what days we aren't. Also, I wanted to watch two episodes, not just one, because everybody at work is ahead of me, and every morning I go into work and I have to hide while they talk about it. So it's very difficult.
But now we're here. So talk to me about Dig Dug. You are high as Jonathan with a pound of blow on this episode. You are bumped right up into the stratosphere like it's 1984 and you're just loaded with cocaine.
Correct. I really, really like this episode a lot. Now, listen, I've only watched it once. So I don't know if my opinion would change if I'd watched it twice. I was hoping to watch it twice before we podcasted, but that just wasn't in the cards, unfortunately.
Okay.
My first time watching this episode, I loved everything that was happening with every character. Every storyline interested me. Every character had their own storyline going on.
Mm-hmm.
And they were all interested. Interesting. I liked everything. I like what everybody had to do. I like the different ways that everybody went. I thought it was really, really interesting. Even Bob the Brain had so much importance to the episode.
He's grown on me.
Oh, I love him. And who else I love? Lucas's little sister. She is fantastic.
Yeah, like sassy little kids are in. Like,
oh my God, they are.
Lady Mormont, Lucas's sister.
She it's was just a thing, so right? Funny. Oh my God.
Sassy kids are cool again.
But even like just from, you know, there was a lot of stuff that was like dark, that was sad, that was scary. And then there was a lot of stuff that was really funny. So many different characters had the opportunity to shine this episode, and so many things happened. It was so packed with action, with things happening, as opposed to
lots
just
happened.
Establishment stuff. So I'm like, there's no way we can talk about this episode having seen the next episode and stay on point, I feel.
Yeah, a lot happened, which is awesome, for sure. Shout out to Scott Cummings, who's very sick in bed. He says, if he dies, tell Barb he loves her. So shout out to Scott. Hope you feel better, buddy.
He loves Barb so much. It's honestly beautiful.
And
I ship them.
Shout out to Matt, who I called before the show. I hope your train crashes. Just kidding. All right. So let's start right off with Joyce right into the thick of things. Joyce has these very kinetic opens, doesn't she? She's either bombing down the street in her car or she's either bombing down the street in her car or she's, furiously, frantically looking for Hopper or calling Hopper, no luck. She walks around the house putting Will's drawings together. It's this giant jigsaw puzzle. Mike is there. So I like the Mike, Will, Joyce dynamic.
Yeah, I like that Mike is now involved in this stuff. And, and Joyce is how they're both involved and they know the other is involved. They're all helping each other.
Will tells Mike about how he feels. And he says, it's like he is reaching into Hawkins more and more, and the more he spreads, the more I feel connected. At first, I felt it in the back of my head. Now it's more like, now I remember all the time, he says.
And he looks like crap, by the way.
He looks awful.
He looks like crap.
What's cool about this is Mike always seems to be Will's caretaker, right? He was in the first season for sure. He was the emotional thrust of finding Will outside of Joyce, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But of the kids, Mike was really dead set on finding Will. And he continues to be his caretaker in this season with telling him maybe it's a good thing. You're like a super spy now, right?
Right.
You can spy on the Shadow Monster. Maybe all this is happening for a reason. So Mike continues to take a positive spin on this thing, which is refreshing. It's nice because it would be easy for Mike, who's upset about Eleven, to just be a bump on the log here. But instead, he sort of does a 180 on his normal routine, which is being upset about Eleven and pushing Max away to actually being a positive force. I thought that was a cool change.
Yeah, I like it a lot. And in this place where Will is so scared and so upset to have his friend with him giving him a positive outlook is so nice to see, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Yep, it's awesome. Will seems to accept this idea. They both look at the drawing, and then Will wonders, what if he spies back? A legit thought, right? If I'm looking in on him, how do we know he's not looking in on me and knowing everything that we're thinking? And Mike just sort of calms him down. And we go right to Hopper, who's moving through these upside-down tunnels with his pistol and his flashlight. The wall shoots some goo into his face. It's like a big vagina on the wall and just fires goo into his face and chests. An interesting turn of events.
This upside-down stuff is scary.
Yeah.
Like, to me, seeing him down there, it's very claustrophobic. Anyone who listens to this podcast regularly knows I'm afraid of basically everything, like heights, airplanes, also small spaces. Not a fan of that either.
Mm-hmm.
Everything about Hopper and this upside down is terrifying to me. It makes me feel uncomfortable to watch. And this is why I say, like, this episode has a little bit of everything. Like, this is actually, like, it really freaks me out. It makes me uncomfortable watching him in these small tunnels and things coming out of nowhere, especially when he's trying to, like, climb out later. Ooh.
Yeah, it's claustrophobic and he can't see well. He's relying on his flashlight. He's totally out of his element. And it's cool to see Hopper not being the physical domineering force that he routinely is. He's outmatched, he's out of his element, and we see him kind of succumb to these, you know, the vaginas on the walls, just shooting things in his face. He coughs, he stumbles, he's unconscious. The upside down hole he climbed down through, I guess, regenerates over the opening and effectively trapping Hopper in this tunnel system. And he's already disoriented, so he's kind of fucked when he wakes up.
Yeah, this is not good news. Nothing about this is good news.
So here you go. What did you say? We got people doing different things, and they're all doing things. We've already introduced the one group. Now we're introducing Hopper. Of course, we're going to tie them up later together.
Right.
We hit our opening credits, and then we hop right back to this motor hotel where Jonathan and Nancy decide
to get
a room.
They're doing something, all right.
Nice. I know you're upset it's not Billy, but...
Oh, my God. I hate Billy still. In this episode, he was also disgusting.
So... I like this moment with the Jonathan and Nancy going to get the room. The woman behind the counter is, she's pretty annoying, and she asks, a twin, of course, a double room or whatever they say.
Yeah, one bed or two, and they're both like, two.
I like how they have to ring the fucking bell.
Even though the lady's sitting right there.
Sitting right there, what a weirdo.
I feel like that's like typical like rude behavior, of, you know what I mean?
Have you ever worked at a place where there was a service bell?
No, but I've rung a service bell at places before, and when you're a kid... That's the fucking best thing in the world.
My parents briefly owned a little diner, like kind of a truck diner. And my dad, as a carpenter, contractor, he built an addition on it. And that addition was an ice cream stand. So when I was younger, my brother and I and other people, we worked there. And when it was dead, it was like fucking dead. If it was cloudy at all, nobody was coming, we would sit... We'd sit in the diner part of the restaurant and we'd stick that little bell out and we'd just be back there playing like card games and shit. And then ping, bing, we'd go out there and serve whatever local yokel was out there demanding their frozen pudding ice cream in a box. They say in a box.
Frozen pudding in a box.
They say in a box, but it's just a cup.
That's a strange thing to say.
It's the weirdest phenomenon I've ever experienced in a workforce. They call it a box without fail. Can I get my ice cream in a box?
I've never heard that. I am from the same place as you.
Weird, right?
Very weird.
They're weirdos. They're super country, but I don't know. And it was always frozen pudding. Like the shittiest. Wait. Have you ever had frozen pudding?
Or ice cream?
It's ice cream called frozen pudding flavor. It's very much like...
What does it taste like? Just ice cream?
It's a vanilla base with all kinds of weird like fruity things in it. It's awful.
Pudding doesn't have fruit in it.
I don't know why it's called what it's called. What do you want me to tell you?
I don't know, but I'm going to Google it and I don't feel good about it.
Okay.
Frozen pudding.
You do what you got to do. But
ice cream.
It's a bit of a long tangent as it is, so don't spend too much time on it.
Pudding ice cream.
So Jonathan and Nancy get a room.
Ew, it is weirdly colored.
Told you.
I don't understand. I pictured it to be chocolate. I'm sorry. Don't you give me the wrap it up. I'm looking at frozen pudding.
Jonathan asks if she wants to Light on or off? And I'm like, light on. I want to see you, girl. So they both sit on their beds like weirdos. It's kind of cute. Nancy kind of laughs at the deja vu, which I didn't remember. Did you?
Yeah, from when he was in her room the time before.
I know. I totally forgot. Light on, light off, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we always seem to hang out when the world is about to end. They compare hand scars. There's some pretty adorable tension here.
Yeah.
Real tense. What you gonna do with that hand, cowboy?
Put it in your pants.
What you gonna do with that hand, cowboy? So they retreat to their beds. What happened to us? After everything, we just disappeared. What'd you think about this line from Nancy? I didn't expect it.
I do and I don't. I think it's a lot of Nancy being very honest with herself, because I think the thing is that there's always been this intense, like, emotional connection between her and Jonathan. And again, we talked about this a lot at the end of season one, how the thing with her and Jonathan didn't work out because, you know, Will came back and Barb didn't. Mm. And that's why she ended up with Steve at the end. And that's why there's all this, you know, stuff between them. And I think now when they're working together for this whole Justice for Barb crusade, where she's kind of done with Steve and all this stuff, she's starting to think, like, what happened? What happened to this thing that was such an important, you know what I mean?
Sure.
There's obviously a very emotional connection between them.
And it's never gone away.
And it's never going away. And now Nancy's finally in a position where she can say something about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, bone them if she wants.
Wow. Okay. So, well, Will needed me, Jonathan said, which I appreciate. And Steve, he lets that hang. Nancy says she waited, to which Jonathan says only a month, which gets him the rollover and the lights off.
I think that's interesting, too.
How come?
Just that information. She waited, but only a month.
I wonder if it was ever communicated that she was going to be waiting.
I don't think so. I find it interesting because we didn't, that's not information that we have, right?
Yeah.
That's something. We went from our conclusion of the season and Will being back and cut to Christmas and she's already with Steve.
The Christmas sweaters, right?
So
maybe it was whatever only a month.
Right, but whatever this month period is.
Maybe Nancy was expecting Jonathan to approach her.
During that month, but when was she not with Steve or with? It's just like that's information we don't have, which we don't necessarily need that information, but it's unless someone in the chat knows something that I'm forgetting. I think it's something that's okay just to be like, hey, there was this idea. You know what I mean? Between the two of them, we don't need too much information. We can't dwell on what didn't happen for too long.
Sure. Makes sense. So only a month. She doesn't like that answer, but that ends this conversation. We hop over to Will, who wakes up suddenly. Mike's there on the floor in a sleeping bag, freezing. I love seeing Mikey so freaking cold in this house because this creepy kid.
I know. It's good. I like that they keep up with
detail.
That.
Good detail. Yeah.
Exactly.
Devil's in the details. We just talked about this on the Walking Dead podcast, which I shall not utter here. Ew. I will not say the name Mordor.
What?
Mordor? I don't know.
Mordor.
Anyway, Will wakes up suddenly. Mike's on the floor, all wrapped up. He's cold. Will goes to see Joyce. I saw him. Hopper. I think he is in trouble. I think he is going to die.
Which is some pretty dark fucking shit, man.
Fuck, dude.
Like, Will knows what's up.
How awesome is Will?
I love this kid. He's creepy as fuck, but he's so good.
Yeah, he's awesome.
Like, he really does a good job portraying what he's supposed to portray.
Right, yeah. And if I can elaborate on that, I feel like he's the perfect... The character works so well in that he's so endearing and kind and innocent. And then he's also going to make you feel a little bit uneasy too without being over the top horror scary.
Exactly.
It's cool.
Like he's not a possessed demon child. He's not like Damien from The Omen.
Right.
But
too much.
There's just that little bit of creepiness to him because of this other thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
he's not inherently creepy. It's everything around him. And this kid plays it well.
Definitely. So Hopper wakes up. He barfs.
He is not doing well.
Looks terrible.
He's like barfing like black shit up too. Like it looks like not good.
Back barfing up fucking upside down.
Ugh.
Tar.
I do not want to be in the upside down ever.
He retrieves his flashlight and gets up. He realizes he's trapped. He tears off his sleeve to make sort of like a makeshift mask and then presses on. Goes left at this weird snake in the road. It's this definitive moment. He looks cool, by the way, with his hat on. He looks like a bandit, like a cowboy bandit. It's neat.
Yeah, for sure.
And then he makes the decision to go left, and he breaks a cigarette. I think he's using it as a trail so he can try to remind himself where he's been.
Oh, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. But then we notice that these little creepy, weird snakes are following him.
Yeah, I don't like them.
Here's what I've learned about the Upside Down. Every monster in the Upside Down, every life form is dangerous.
Yeah, for sure.
Everything.
Even cute little Dart.
Even cute little not-so-little Dart.
Now Dart's big.
Yeah.
We'll get to him.
Yeesh. Edwin in the Edwin Beltran in the chat asks, you guys think Hopper will swallow a slug just like Will? I didn't even think about that.
I didn't
either. That's a great question. It's possible, like, before this is out, maybe he'll be affected in some way, too.
Is that a thing that perhaps if you're in the Upside Down, like, almost, I don't know, like, contractual, like okay, if you don't end up dead down here, you're going to take it out there with you. Like, is maybe that the point? Is maybe the point never even to kill these people, but to reproduce and spread on the right side up, basically?
How do we know? Yeah. I think we know that they are trying to spread based on some of the testimony from Owens, which is like, we're trying to stop that. We're trying to keep them from spreading. I think they are definitely trying to spread.
And we see Will coming back has only been this thing where he is, I don't know, thrown up Dart, which is a Demogorgon.
Sure.
And, you know, so on and so forth from there. So who's to say Hopper's not going to do something similar?
For sure. Let's shoot over to Lucas's house. When mom is mad at you, how do you make her not mad? He asks his dad. His dad says, I apologize. Then I get your mother whatever she wants. Even when she's wrong, Lucas ponders, to which dad says, she's never wrong, son. I love how he looks over the top of his paper to get eye contact to make sure Lucas understands this lesson. It's adorable.
Yes, it's fantastic.
We've been asking to see Lucas's parents for a season. We finally get to.
I like Lucas's parents almost as much as I like Lucas's sister, Erica, right?
There you go.
She is... This whole time, just the syrup on the waffles, I can't. She is so freaking funny. She's so cute and so sassy, and I just love her.
So Lucas heads out to go hang with Dustin. Lucas rides his bike.
Unquote.
Yeah, pretty fast. Past Dustin's house, where we kind of cut in on Dustin.
Yeah.
And Dustin's mom
screaming for Muse. Oh, my heart.
Dustin's mom's looking for Muse. We cut to Dustin's house. Dustin's mom's looking for Muse. Dustin pretends to be on the phone. He isn't. Dustin's mom's very upset, obviously. Dustin lies and says that Muse is spotted near Loch Nora, I think he calls it. Mm-hmm. And then Dustin's mom takes off. Dustin gets to work. I love this transition to, this is so 80s, right? This reminds me of every 80s horror movie, kind of. There's an innocence to it. It's not like overly super terrifying. It's like in Poltergeist. Do you remember that movie at all?
Of course.
They sit the kids down and then they slide across the kitchen floor from the Poltergeist. Just put the cat on the floor.
I can't. She keeps climbing back up here.
But do you remember the part I'm talking about?
Yes, I do.
And then the chairs are all stacked up and like, whoa, it's weird. It's creepy, but not.
It's not like
you're not overly terrified just yet. That's kind of like this. He stumbles out. He's got a catcher's mask on, a chest protector, a hockey goalie pads, and he leaves us, I guess it's a baloney trail.
Yeah, I think it's a trail of baloney.
And out comes Dart, looking bigger by the day.
I'm fairly certain that Dart is now the size of my dog.
Too big.
Way too big.
And Dustin's terrified. I like that we see Dustin afraid of Dart at this point.
Yes.
There's no more pet here.
He knows.
Now it's become a bit of a troubling thing. He's afraid, but I do love how he manages to run out in there and smash it with a hockey stick, and he knocks it into the storm cellar. And locks it up. So a distinct part of Dustin's storyline here is this relationship change between him and Dart.
Right. And this is smart because we talked about it earlier on in the talk about Dart, I believe, when Matthew Anderson was on the podcast, about how we don't want this to be the storyline of, oh, I love this creature, it's my friend, and I'm going to look out for it. We've already had the turn where he's like, shit, I made a mistake.
Mm.
And this mistake is... I mean, causing major issues. He lied to all his friends. This thing is on the loose. It's big. It killed his mother's cat that she loved.
Mm-hmm.
And just this thing is so... The scene where Dart is eating the bologna and he's hiding is also the stereotypical horror where he can see through the cracks and he's like, what's it doing? Oh, shit, it's looking at me.
Right.
I gotta hide.
Right.
And then look back and, oh, shit, it's such a well-done scene.
Mm-hmm.
But I like this, and I like that Dustin does this on his own because everybody else has their stuff going on. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, we talked about this. Yeah.
It's I just
definitely had some trepidation about the direction of the Dart storyline. How do you feel about it? Do you feel like it's hasn't blown up too crazy yet? How do you feel about it?
No, I like that it took this turn. I appreciate this because, again, I'd rather this where he's like, holy shit, this thing is bad. I have to fix what I did, as opposed to him sticking up for it till the bitter end.
Mm-hmm.
And even just when he puts the thing in the basement, he's like, I'm sorry. You ate my cat. I'm sorry. And listen, it's not funny to eat cats, okay? It's real fucking sad, and I feel real bad for Dustin's mom. It actually made me emotional when she was all excited that she thought the cat might be alive. It made me real sad. But when he said that part, it was kind of funny.
In the chat, Ellie asks, I'm super curious about where Dart slept that night. Did Dustin keep sharing his room with him once he found out he was a Demogorgon? That's some creepy pet love.
Ooh. He couldn't have. He must have slept somewhere else.
He must have slept outside, or...
I mean, Dustin didn't sleep outside. The thing was definitely in Dustin's room.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You're right, actually. Yeah, that is fucked up.
I hope he didn't. Oh my God, the idea of him sleeping in the bed with, like, in the room with that thing, like, actually really gives me, like, the freaking heebie-jeebies. I do not like it.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
All right, let's move over to, let's see,
11 in getting, the truck.
Yeah, this is awesome. This whole sequence with 11 and Terry, and yeah. I believe this woman's name is Becky.
Yeah.
Is incredible. First of all, she hitchhikes her ass there.
And just when she's talking to, like, the truck driver, and he says, all right, we're at the 515 wherever, and she goes, 515. And which is the most adorable and sweet little thing, because it is the 515 in this circumstance, but she remembers Hopper teaching her, like, no, it's not 515, it's 515. And this was very sweet and very, like, little and very heartwarming to me.
Yep, like, it calls back to what her and Hopper spoke about.
Right.
Mailbox reads Ives. We know what that means.
By the way, before we get into, like, too deep into this, earlier in the chat, Henrique Cesar Rodriguez said that we are actually fools. He didn't say that. He was actually very pleasant, but said, guys, it says specifically in her fight with Hopper that she was with Hopper for 326 days directly. And we spent, like, at least 50 minutes on the podcast trying to figure out how long she had been there. So... thank you for correcting us.
Which means she was outside for how many?
She was with Hopper for 326. So if you do the math as to how many days it was probably like about a month.
Okay.
Because we're at like 350 something at this point.
That doesn't jab with my hair expertise.
Yeah.
But I'll swallow it for now.
Way to pronounce my Latin last name, he says. Listen, I try my best, okay? I'm from Boston. I can't pronounce much very well.
You're not really from Boston.
But. Well, close enough. I would, you know. Anyways.
Henrique Cesar Rodriguez. Don't worry, bro. We got plenty of Portuguese people around here. We know what's up. I know he's not Portuguese. I'm just saying. That pronunciation. Whoa. They're all the same. I'm kidding. All right. So, Olivia gets dropped off. She knocks on the door. A woman answers and tries to turn her away.
Yeah.
And then when she says, I want to see Mama, Becky lets her in.
Can we remember this lady? She was in the last season.
Yeah.
She spoke to Hopper, right?
Yeah, for sure. Hold on. Henrique is saying he's Portuguese. What the fuck? We're like brothers, dude.
Oh, my God. I'm Portuguese too, little guys.
I have the least Portuguese name on the planet, though.
Oh, he's from Brazil.
Brazil? All right. Enough of that. Enough of our... Henrique, we'll chat later. PM me. Send me a couple dick pics. We'll work this out.
Don't send him dick pics.
We don't want to take up the show with our new romance. So anyway, Family Feud is on.
Of course. It's Family Feud.
And Mama is a gibbering mess. She repeats a phrase. Breathe, sunflower, rainbow, 450. All this is going to make sense by the end of the episode.
Yes.
What's wrong with Mama? 11 asks. I got to tell you something right now. 11 is an adorable child. And she plays vulnerable, confused very well. But there's also a part of me that has a distinct, ooh. Like when she asks a question like that, you feel almost like she's looking through you. Like you can, the actress does such a good job of making you feel latent power when she turns and looks at people.
The way she opens the door.
Yeah, it's awesome.
When they won't let her in. Mm. Oh my God.
You can just feel the latent power in her when she did, and that's a compliment to the actress. Anyway, we go back to Jonathan and Nancy. They go to 3833. We don't know where she is. We don't know what they're doing. Come to find out, they're going to see fucking Murray.
This guy is fucking so really stupid and really funny.
Let me ask you this. We both were a little bit down on the recorder, how they never checked her bag, how it was a little corny, and this plot line was a little like, eh. Although we did like seeing Nancy and Jonathan do stuff, we were complimentary on the fact that our characters have agency. How do you feel about them sort of turning to this guy? Do you like it more or less?
I think it makes sense for them go to him. They can't do it on their own. They know their kids.
Totally agree that
they need help. They know this is what this guy's been trying to do for all this time. He's already done a ton of research and he's going to believe them.
Yep. I think this is a really good move by the showrunners to not have it be a high school girl's quest to bring down a giant secret lab.
Right.
Because I just wouldn't have believed that she could accomplish this with... She doesn't have the resources at her disposal.
Right.
She needed an ally of power, even if he's a fucking crazy person.
I might hate him the next episode, but I thought he was pretty fucking funny in this episode.
Jesse Bev, he's the lone gunman of Stranger Things, abso-fucking-lutely.
Seriously. When he ever is like mixing his vodka, and he's like, wait, it's like mixing this drink. I get it. I'm like, this is a man after my own heart.
He's got I love the stereotypical detective relationship lines that he has on his corkboard of evidence.
Oh my God. It's like every like joke meme about like the one from with like Charlie from Always Sunny in Philadelphia with like all the lines when they're talking about like, you know, making a murder and all those shows. It's the most stereotypical fantastic thing. And I just love Nancy's where she's like, hey, your timeline's wrong. Like,
yep.
Let me tell you what I know. Let us share information. You've researched this a lot. You have all this stuff that you've looked into, and I lived through it. Let me actually give you the true side of the story from where I'm sitting, which is probably what this guy Murray's been dying to hear from somebody, you know?
Yeah. And a smart move by her to sit him down and to offer information. This is a huge show of trust. This is a big olive branch in an attempt to engender an alliance with Murray, and it works out. We're assuming it's going to work out in her favor. And Murray knows just enough to know whether or not Nancy's telling the truth.
What? Yeah.
He's not going to be like, you're fucking out of here. Get out of my house. Mm-hmm. No. He knows enough about it. And unless he's a total charlatan and he's just pretending, which obviously when you walk in his house, you don't get the impression he's full of shit.
Right.
He's a real like Mel Gibson and conspiracy theory kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
Conspiracy, was the name of that movie with Mel Gibson? Conspiracy or Conspiracy Theory? Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
the classic.
The classic. But, yeah, she sits him down. Listen, it's wrong. I'm going to explain everything. And that's that. So, where to now? Now let's go to another character who's doing stuff with one of our other characters in their own little plot line, too. Awesome.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Again.
I'm on board with this. I feel like we got enough time with everybody and... I still didn't feel like I was like, oh, this is, they're overdoing it. Like, you know how sometimes, for example, The Walking Dead will try to do too many characters in one episode or too few?
Yeah.
Like, Stranger Things went to every single character in this episode, and I never was like, this is too much for one episode. I was like, I'm excited.
Yeah.
I hope this goes on for a whole nother hour.
Yep, absolutely. It was a good balance. And I think that comes back to the story being a small enough scale to where they all affect each other.
Right.
Right. Like in Game of Thrones, you will get you'll get an episode where they spend time on all these different characters, and a lot of them are interconnected, but then a lot of them aren't. They're on separate continents. They're not going to be interacting with each other for a long time, if ever.
Right, right.
But the story is a small scale enough to where a lot of these things affect each of the other things.
Correct.
Which is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So Billy drops Max off the arcade, calls her a shitbird.
He's a piece of shit. Sorry, I know you get mad that that's all I say about him, but I literally hate him so much.
Max, if you didn't know how Jessica felt about Billy yet, she's going to remind you every time we do an episode.
What do you want me to do? Just not say anything about how much I hate him? Do you want me to just keep it inside? You want me to hold it in?
I want you to ball all that anger up and then have an explosion of lust next time you see him.
I'm not going to ever have that. Ever.
Oh, shit.
Ever.
All right, so Billy drops Max off at the arcade, calls her shipbird. Max learns that Dig Dug is dead, but not really. It was a ploy by Lucas, because Keith takes her to another machine, i.e. to where Lucas is waiting to talk to her in private.
I'm sorry. When this machine is broken and Keith's like, I have another machine in the back. Let me unlock this employees only door. I was like, is this guy going to molest her? Like, what the fuck is happening right now? It was literally, this is the one thing in the episode that made me so uncomfortable because I'm like, what are they doing right now? It was so weird. And that guy looks like such a creep that it was just so fucking gross to me. I don't know. It really, like, I started to get nervous.
It definitely was super creepy.
Like, the first time when you were watching it, were you like, what the fuck is he going to do?
I was
right
thinking,
now?
How is she going to get away from him? He's really rangy and
seriously?
Tall.
I'm like, how are we going to go down this dark plot line?
It's like the Ed Kemper version of adolescence.
Oh,
because he's so much taller. Is he so much taller than everyone?
Oh my God, put a pair of glasses on him, and he is Ed Kemper as a child. Yeesh. Who would have thought?
Yikes!
That's where he began.
Anyway, you better get me that date now, Sinclair. Keith says to Lucas. What is this shit? What is this shit, stalker? Max asks. Lucas says he will tell her the truth. You could be arrested or possibly killed. Do you accept the risk? Max says she does. I accept the risk. Lucas lays it down, and of course we cut away. No reason to see that. We already know what happened. We watched the fucking show.
We got to go talk to some other people, and we'll check back in on you guys soon.
What do you think of Lucas telling Max?
I love this.
Yeah. Seems like you probably would, right?
It makes sense. It feels like where this started, where Lucas and Dustin were both like really into Max, but then Dustin had all this other stuff going on with Dart and stuff, and he kind of fell off a little bit. And it by default almost made Lucas and Max the closest.
Yes.
Like he was Max's closest connection to the group, and he probably felt the closest to her, you know, and wanted her to be a part of it the most at this point. They probably have the closest relationship. Like, he's her closest relationship at this point.
You know what else is interesting to note? Do you remember who was very anti-11? Lucas. Interesting that he's kind of shifted his... It's like he's growing up.
Yeah.
It's cool. He was very anti-11, where now Mike's sort of anti-Max.
Right.
And Lucas was tough on her, and now Lucas... We're seeing a kid growing up and going, okay, I'm going to extend some trust. Of course, he likes her too.
Of course.
But he's going to extend some trust to her. He's going to trust her with information. It's unlikely he consulted the guys on this.
No, he definitely did not. There is no way he's asked anybody to do this. He's doing this on his own.
Yeah.
And he's doing it because he wants to and probably because he feels like it's the right thing to do. And he wants her to be a part of this if she wants to be, essentially. Yeah,
for sure.
You know?
Yep. Cut to Will scribbling. Joyce and Mike are there. This is where you saw Hopper, Joyce asks. Will says he thinks so. Joyce tries to match the spot. Mike finds it. So cool. They're all working together. I like this synergy. Hopper is here, Joyce asks. Again, yeah, but we need to figure out where here is, Mike says. So they know where he is on the piece of paper, but they have no frame of reference against...
They don't know what the piece of paper is.
Right. They have no frame of reference against the entire project they've laid out across her entire house again.
Right. Because this is the thing. They don't know what any of this is other than Hopper saying vines.
Vines. Right. Joyce greets Bob the Brain. Surprise.
I'm sorry. I fucking love this guy.
I'm going to tell you something right now. If this show really wanted to push an agenda for Hopper and Joyce, she would have turned him away at the door and he wouldn't have been in this scene.
But instead,
the show is more mature than that and it's stronger writing to bring Bob into this scene and to integrate him into this while sort of keeping him in the dark a little bit, right up until, of course, the end.
And at the same time...
It's great. It's a great way to get Bob involved in the story.
And it's still... And this doesn't turn away from this Joyce Hopper thing because it is so clear that there's like this thing between them, especially at the end when they get to him. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah,
you're right. In any other thing, it'd be like, hey, Bob, you showed up. Sorry. And she's like, okay, shit, we got rid of Bob. And that's not what happens here. Like he's actually useful to the cause.
Correct.
And he does matter in this situation. It matters to Joyce And I agree with you 100%. I love that Bob is so involved and that he's the one who like cracks this code.
Yes.
I love every second of Bob in this episode. I love when he's sitting at the table working on the map and doing the I love him.
Awesome.
I want to fucking hug him. I love him. If he's a bad guy somehow, I hate Stranger Things forever because he's the best.
Mike tells Bob, find the X. Bob makes a pirate treasure joke. which is right out of Goonies.
Of course.
A callback to Sean Astin back in the day, which is amazing. Bob takes a pirate. Bob pulls Joyce aside. Will doesn't look well. I like this too.
Yes.
I like how Bob isn't overstepping his bounds, but he's expressing his concern because he's a responsible adult.
Right.
He's not judging her and saying, you don't know how to raise your kid. What are you doing? This is blah, blah, blah. He doesn't have that bullshit insecurity that happens. He's a grown man. And he just says, hey, you guys don't look okay. Was this an episode?
Yeah.
And of course, Joyce denies to protect herself, to protect Will, and to just not have to deal with this right now.
And to find Hopper, too.
How can this be good for you or Will, Bob asks. How could I figure anything out if I don't know the context of the game? He then realizes where Lover's Lake is, and he says, I get it. He then starts to put the drawing together. He finds Eno River. The lines aren't roads. They just act like roads. It's not a puzzle. It's a map. Right, Will? Question mark.
I love that part when he says, right, Will.
Right. It's awesome. It's like empowering.
But it's not even just that. It's that he thinks that they know what the answer is. That this is a game created.
Of course.
He doesn't understand that. None of them know, including Will.
Yep,
and
I actually missed
that. Saying right,
yep.
Will is because he thinks that Will knows the answer and that he got it right. Oh, I got it right?
For sure. It's good stuff.
I love that moment.
It's awesome.
And Will's reaction is fantastic where he's like, holy shit, it is.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Good shit. Hopper tries his radio. He steps on like a dead mammal and it kind of kicks. It's gross. The floor is essentially alive. The wall too. It doesn't like fire because he holds up his lighter to it, I believe, or a match.
Which makes sense. Did Dr. Owens, did he know about them burning the things in the lab?
I don't know if he did, but I feel like this is almost like primal instinct.
Yeah.
That if it retreats from fire, then it is in a way like us and probably can be killed.
Right.
Hopper makes a torch, chases it away from the wall and starts to dig himself out. So he sort of finds a way where he thinks he's going to dig himself out and he starts going through the wall as it recedes from the fire. It's cool.
Again, man. This gives me a lot of like claustrophobia, anxiety. I don't really like it. It's cool. Makes me super uncomfortable.
And then we have, we cut to Dusting digging into the earth. That was a good cut. He calls out a code red while cleaning his house and burying the cat.
Listen, I'm really sad about the cat. You all know. But this scene is so fucking cute.
It's awesome.
Like, and I love Erica too. When she's so sassy, like to him on the walkie, she's the funniest little kid.
She says code shut up or something.
I know. She's so.
Code shut your mouth.
And she's like in Lucas's room, like going through his shit.
His fucking He-Man's. The way she regards the He-Man
like with disgust.
With disdain is so great.
Oh my God. It's so
God,
funny.
I fucking miss my He-Man action figures. Can you guys hook me up?
He would really like a He-Man.
I will definitely play with my action figures again.
Oh my God.
All right. So back to 11.
Yes.
So she talks to Becky. She's stuck in a long dream, Becky says. 11 wonders if it's a good dream. Becky hopes so. 11 is clearly upset. She always believed that you were out there, Becky says. She always believed you'd come home. To which 11 says, home, question mark.
Yeah.
Yeah, home, Becky says. The woman, I don't know her name yet. Becky shows 11 her old room.
Which is so like, must be such an emotional thing.
Sure.
This girl who grew up in a lab. Like, yep. This could have, this was supposed
memories.
To be my life.
Yeah.
Oh, this never was her
never
life.
Never was her life. It was supposed to be. Yep. Absolutely.
That's very sad.
Super sad.
Matthew Anderson is for sure crying somewhere.
On that train.
On that train. That's why he couldn't talk to us. He's too emotional.
There's some like nosy guy from like Britain who's kind of fat on the train next to him. And Matt just turns and puts his head in the window. And he's just like, this poor girl. And the guy's like, are you all right, mate? Are you crying? I've never cried on a train. Never cried on a train before, mate. He just hugs Matt. It's super uncomfortable.
Oh, my God.
I might get some hot pie later.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I bet he will.
Some hot meat pie. I love pies. All right.
Oh, my
so,
God.
So everyone gets off the train. Matt just stays on it. He has this contemplative music video scene with like the cityscape
alone
going
on the
by.
Train, yeah.
The train. Just all the fucking poverty out
all
the
of a
window.
Sudden, no, there's like a Matthew Anderson voiceover and it's like, and then I contemplated my life.
So good.
Oh, God.
Oh, so fucking good.
I hope Matt listens to this podcast one day.
So I want to help you, but I need you to talk to me when you're ready, okay? So that kind of creeped me out that Becky said that.
Oh, at first it did, but then...
It's like she's almost like, I need you to fucking tell me what's up.
I had a lot of mixed feelings on Becky. Actually, when she said, I need you to talk to me, but then she said, not today, not tomorrow, but when you're ready. I was like, oh, I like this.
Took the edge off.
But then there was this, when we were flashing through like Terry's memories and stuff, and there was a memory of like 11 being born and like Becky being there.
Mm.
And then Becky being like, no, the baby died. I'm like, is Becky bad? Like, is she have some in with the lab? Is this going to go very poorly? Like,
sure.
And then I get worried. And I don't know if it's just me being overly paranoid, but I felt really distinctly uncomfortable when we were going through those flashes and like Becky was in those scenes.
Same here.
Very uncomfortable.
The lights flicker. 11 investigates. The woman passes it off as bad wiring. An old house.
Yeah, okay.
11 doesn't think so. I write, I don't trust Becky. 11 walks over to Mama. It's Mama, she says. Mama has a nosebleed. Look familiar, everyone? Yes, mm-hmm. Of course. She knows I'm here, 11 remarks. The TV channels start to change and 11 comes to the conclusion that Mama wants to talk. Very fucking cool.
Yeah, of course. She knows.
Yeah. Is 11 getting taller every episode?
Probably.
Jesus Christ.
She's a growing girl. She probably drinks a lot of milk, which is disgusting.
Wow.
Just saying.
Well, it is 84. Definitely shoveling down whole milk.
Ugh. Oh my God. I didn't want to throw up in my mouth. You just saying that.
There's this really sexy video of Billy pouring milk all over his rippling abs.
Stop.
You should check it out.
I literally would shoot myself in the face. Okay.
So let's go back to Bob the Brain getting to work with Mike and Joyce.
I'm sorry. I don't know what else to say other than I love him.
Well, say something else. You're on a fucking podcast. A lot of people listen to it.
I've said a lot of really smart and intuitive things in this podcast.
It's true.
And if I want to say that I love Bob... And I love the work that he does in
yes,
the scene.
Kind of want to fire you.
You know what? Best of luck to you. Best of luck moving on in the world
should
without
I call,
me.
I'll call Matt again. Don't make me
oh,
call
yeah.
Matt
call,
again.
Call Matt. Call Matt who's crying on the train. It was all cranky when we called him. You see if he wants to do this podcast. You want to call him? You want to call Keith Bonneau? He's dying to get my job. I'm sure he'd be fantastic on the pod.
I heard him troll somebody hard on a podcast recently.
Yeah, who, me?
No, podcast he was on. Anyway, let's continue. They are measuring the distances in inches on the map. Essentially, they're trying to scale their measurements
yes.
to real life, which is, of course, a hard math problem.
For sure.
So he's trying to locate X. He guesses maybe a half a mile south of Danford, so they decide to head out. Awesome.
I'm on board.
I like this. It's an adventure. It's fun. They're doing shit, like you said, right?
Yes.
Dustin gets to the Wheeler house. Ted answers the door.
This is great, too. We get a whole Mr. Wheeler scene.
Mm.
This is the most Mr. Wheeler we've ever seen.
I love how he says, our children don't really live here anymore.
No, he's such a fucking creep.
I love it.
Like, do you think the writers of the show, okay.
No.
I know that they don't care about our podcast, but do you think that other people have said, like, Mr. Wheeler's kind of like a serial killer, and they're like, you know what? Or Mr. Wheeler. You know that they know that people say, like, that the Wheelers are, like, the worst parents ever and never know what's going on with their kids.
Yeah.
So I feel like they're playing to the audience a lot with this.
Sure, sure.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Where she's on the phone, Mrs. Wheeler's on the phone for 2 hours, and Mr. Wheeler's like, don't you know our kids don't live here anymore?
Yeah.
I feel like they're really playing to the stuff that, you know, everyone said about the Wheelers last season. And I'm sorry, like, this fan service worked for me. It made me laugh. I liked the Mr. Wheeler moments.
It's true. Dustin's so mad though.
Oh, I know.
I love it. I love how incredulous he is. He's like, what the fuck?
I know. And he's like, language?
Yeah. Steve shows up with roses. I like this connection. This is great. Are those for Mr. and Mrs. Wheeler? Dustin asks him. no. Well, come with me. Grabs his job, jumps in Steve's car, just assumes he's going to take him this place. He also asks him if he still has the bat with the nails.
Everything about, again, this is fantastic, where he's like, all right.
So I can slaughter my pet that I've trapped in the storm cellar.
No, exactly.
That's so fucked up to think about.
This is this tough thing where, with Steve Harrington, you know, season one, Steve was not supposed to continue throughout the entire season. He was just supposed to be Nancy's boyfriend the first few episodes, you know, to probably get you through the Barb murder. But they liked Joe Keery and he did a good job and they had this chemistry and so they kept him on. But you can't keep Steve and Nancy together forever. You have to move on from that. So it's like, okay, but we still like Steve. So how do we keep him in the show?
Interesting.
And now he's going to help Dustin kill a Demogorgon. Know who loves this pairing in this little group? Me. I'm on board.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm Team Steve.
It's funny. It's the two characters who are kind of alone right now.
This is so true. Oh.
Right.
That is so true.
So there you go.
And they're going to work together.
I'll explain on the way, Dustin tells him.
But Dustin's so funny too. He's like, we got more important problems than your love life. Yeah. Oh, it's fantastic.
Back to struggling Hopper. This whole Hopper ordeal is brutal.
Oh my God.
It just shows how tough he is, right?
I know. He never stops. He keeps going and going and going. I would have killed myself 10 minutes before, for sure.
Yeah. You'd definitely be Tom Jane at the end of The Mist. You'd have blown your brains out in the fucking grocery store.
I would have even made it outside to the monsters, please.
All right. Upside down snakes go after him. He tries to cut them off, but he's overwhelmed and pinned. Muffled screams underground as we move away.
Oh, this is again, it's so scary and uncomfortable, and you worry so much for Hopper. And this is not a show that really kills off characters where we have to worry for their lives, per se. And, you know, there's not a point where I'm watching this where I'm like, holy shit, Hopper's going to die. But I watch this and I think oh my God, I'm worried about the outcome of this because him dying is not the only thing that could go terribly wrong.
Sure.
We already saw what happened with Will.
Sure.
Yep. You know?
Yeah, it's a good point. It's a good point.
So.
So Lucas wraps up his story with Max. It's crazy, but I really liked it. I had a few issues. She's critiquing his fucking creative writing project. It's so funny.
I've always liked Max and thought she was a good character, but this was when I was like, you know what? I'm good with her. She's good in my book. She was fantastic.
I wished it had more originality. Lucas is like, what?
Oh, I know.
He's so shocked by her response. But he shouldn't be. But he is. He is because he went through it. He shouldn't be because it's an outrageous story to tell somebody who didn't go through the crazy experience that you went through.
And that's the thing that he doesn't realize is that the story is unbelievable to someone on the outside.
Of course.
Her reaction is pretty natural.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that. I love that she isn't just like, oh my God, thank you for telling me. And she falls into the group. I love that she doesn't believe him because it's so realistic. And again, this is good writing. Bad writing would be her being like, holy shit, Lucas, thank you for telling me. How can I help? Do you know what I mean?
Especially a tough chick like this that has to put up with Billy, right?
But you know that shittier TV shows would do just that.
Mm-hmm. And this is the type of character that you would imagine is going to be skeptical. Somebody who grows up with Billy.
Exactly. And right? So that's, the show gets it right. They really get it right with her attitude. And then his anger as he continues, you know, his friends don't lie. And she's like, you already lied to me about the stupid machine.
That's right.
She's still upset that she's being kept outside of this group.
Mm-hmm.
And now she's even more upset that she feels lied to.
And she demands proof. So the demanding proof is his next quest, right?
Of course.
Now he has to capture proof and give it to Max. And then we get this thing here. Again, this thing with Billy. Don't follow me outside. Lucas says, am I supposed to just trust you? Lucas says, yes. And that's when she's like, I'm out of here. Don't follow me out. And then Billy says, what the hell did I tell you? Oh, Lucas. So he's a name now. It's a small town, okay? We're not hanging out. Well, you know what happens when you lie. I'm not lying. And then Billy peels out. Everywhere Billy goes, he peels out.
I'm not even going to say anything about Billy. I have nothing to say that I haven't already said.
Moving on.
I can't, though. I'm sorry.
Okay, go ahead.
No, but the show is not going to
tell
me.
I'm not going to say, okay, go ahead. Say it.
The show is not.
Wait, I don't want to say it. Okay, I'm
going to
say it.
Convince me that Billy is not racist. I'm sorry. You have no way around it, show.
Mm-hmm. Junk fist. Billy's trying out that, I don't care style racism this time.
He's going to go through awesome. All the different racisms he can.
Yeah, next episode, it'll be the I had a black friend racism.
Oh, God.
That's my favorite.
That's the best.
That's my favorite racism.
Oh, I had a black friend once. Oh, okay.
Really? Congrats.
Good work.
Like you had a dog once? what the fuck does that mean? Anyway.
Oh, my God.
So, Nancy plays the tape for Murray. I didn't expect that. I kind of forgot about the tape when we got to Murray's house. And then I can't believe I forgot. is it enough? Nancy asks. Here is one of my favorite parts of this episode. It isn't. It's garbage. They will manipulate this. This is not going to work.
Right.
I like that. To be more specific, he pours himself booze, thinking with vodka. He puts on some jazz that helps him think. Nancy asks how long is it going to take. Marie says longer if you keep talking. I've said that to girls before.
Wow.
Just kidding. Anyway, Marie, you don't need to believe you. You need them to believe you. The world at large, they don't believe any of us. That's a crazy conspiracy theory, Doc. And then Nancy thinks the tape is enough. You're being naive, Nancy. Most people aren't wired like me and you. Most people don't want to look behind the curtain. They like the curtain. The minute someone with any authority calls bullshit, everyone will agree. And that's when Nancy's upset. She's like, what, we did all this for nothing? I'm just saying, I'm thinking. Right?
Yeah.
Murray pours another drink, this one less strong. It's perfect, he says. We water it down. I like the analogy here.
Me too.
We water this down. We moderate it, just like this drink. We make it a little more tolerable. Perhaps Barb was exposed to some dangerous toxins, something scary but familiar. Close enough, but it hits the man right where it hurts. They all share a drink. He's going to go to jail now that he's had drinks with high school kids in his creepy apartment.
With his bathrobe on.
With his bathrobe.
That's my favorite part.
And a beard and creepy glasses.
This guy might slowly become my new favorite character.
Well, it's par for course where you like the creeps. Peter Baelish, Murray the conspiracy theorist.
This to me was great, and this is why I really like this stuff even more, is again, it's good writing, and everything that he says is logical. He's like, hey, if you go and start talking about monsters in another dimension and them killing Barb, do you understand that no one
You're
will
fucked.
Believe you, even if it's true?
Right.
Everything he's saying makes complete sense. We can't tell the whole truth. No one will ever believe us. We'll never get what you want, which is justice.
Yes.
We have to, you know, go for the lesser charge. It's like, you know what I mean? When you can't get O.J. Simpson on, you know, first degree murder, so you sue him for, you know, a zillion dollars for killing his wife.
There you go.
You know the story.
That's some, get him on
civil
a white.
Civil court
get him
versus
on a,
criminal
get him on
court.
A white, well, on a white guy law.
No, but it's so true. It's like the difference is like criminal law and civil law. There's a zillion things that you can be found guilty of in a civil court that you won't be found guilty of in a criminal court. And it's like the same idea. People are not going to believe that a monster killed Barb, but they'll certainly believe maybe there's toxic chemicals coming from this plant that killed Barb, and then you're still getting your justice.
I got you.
Without 100% of the truth.
Yeah, they're culpable in one way or another, and you want them to be culpable in the more realistic way.
They're going to be held responsible that way, whereas if you say... Yes. It was a monster. They'll never be held responsible because no one will believe
taken.
It. You know,
we get it. Thanks, Judge.
Sorry.
Thanks, Judge Judy.
Ugh. God, so much for trying to talk.
So, go to Owens examining soil samples. You want to do that?
Owens, yeah.
This is fucking cool.
Yeah, this stuff is creepy, and I don't know what's going on, but obviously he's surprised.
Yes,
is what I like about this whole scene is they're like, "Oh, we found this thing. Like, check it out." And he looks genuinely surprised about what's happening with swirly soil.
He burns one in the test tube. He heats one, and then the others react
the same way.
Which is showing how they're all connected.
And which we're going to see at the end of the episode again.
Which,
we've already set a
precedent.
Which, of course,
is all connected back to Will. Yes, exactly.
Exactly. Which is, again, you got to do this stuff. I mean, and you don't. You could have just had them burning that thing and Will reacting, and you would have gotten it. But they're like, hey, we're going to set a precedent for it anyways, just so you don't think we're being crazy.
And then the Hawkins people know as well.
Exactly.
Which is cool because this is going to come, they arrive on the scene at the end, which is neat.
Yes.
So Eleven and Becky. Becky tells Eleven to tell Terry that she's sorry she didn't believe her. Eleven tells her to stop talking.
I know. Can I sit here?
Eleven is about to take an astral walk, whatever. Eleven approaches Mom, right? It's me, Jane. I'm here now. She hears Terry's thoughts. I am home. Terry looks at her, makes eye contact, and grabs her hand and says, no. And then Eleven has this very powerful vision. A woman walking, a bloody pregnancy. Eleven sees it happening. Brenner delivers the baby. Brenner or Brennan? Matthew Modine.
Like, fuck, now I don't remember.
Fucking private joker. Becky tells Terry that Jane wasn't breathing. That concerned me. That's why I was like, she in on it?
That's what I felt, again, exactly the same way. This is the thing that made me really kind of get nervous about Becky.
Me too.
Maybe I'm wrong.
So it's Brenner, by the way.
Whoops.
Thank you to Colin Duncan in the chat. Becky tells Terry that Jane wasn't breathing. Terry has to be restrained. In her vision, she goes into her safe. This is the three to the left, four to the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
In that safe, she has a pistol.
Yes.
She produces this pistol and goes to the Hawkins lab. When asked for a badge, she produces the gun and opens fire. Of course, we get a great klaxon alarm sound going off. Jane is playing with another kid.
Yeah. I wonder who that kid is.
Yeah, no shit, right? From the first episode?
Although I guess she's a little too old.
Yeah.
I guess I gotta look. Hold on.
I mean, maybe 2 years could be a difference maker. They look about the same age, though.
Yeah, they look about the same age here, because I was gonna say if you...
Whatever. Continue.
Anyway. Yeah, go ahead.
I am gonna say there's a connection there, though. Terry is quickly apprehended. She gets horrific shock treatment.
Oh, I hate watching that stuff. It's brutal. So hard to watch.
Yeah. 450, he calls out. That's the machine number. That's the name she repeated. Zap. They zap the shit out of her. They zap her right into can't get right land.
Oh, I can't. I hate that this is the thing that we actually did to people. Like, I mean, recently.
Back in the day.
This is the 80s. Mm. And they did this stuff into way past the 80s.
Gimme shock treatment. Sorry, Ramones. So all of the phrases that she's been repeating sort of mindlessly become apparent to us now.
Mm-hmm.
That's really cool. Eleven pulls the blindfold off. Her nose is bleeding. She's huffing and puffing. She's scared. It's a very scary experience, but I like it. I think it was about time we got some information on Terry Ives.
I agree. And I'm fine with, you know, sometimes it's hard to do flashbacks and to do things like this and to do it right. And I think you have a scenario where you can do it in a manner where it doesn't feel weird.
It doesn't feel like they're just trying to fabricate emotion.
No, it's showing you like...
What happened?
Again, in Becky already had this conversation with Eleven where she's like, okay, it's like she's stuck in a dream. And Eleven right. says, is it a good dream or a bad dream? Is it the same dream? Is it a different dream? And here's the answer. This is the dream, the loop that Terry is stuck in.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a good dream. It's a pretty, you know... Basically remembering every traumatic experience of her life.
Sure.
But it shows us, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of things that are important for us to know, I feel, going forward.
It was intense, man. It was a great scene. I loved it.
Me too.
And like you said, you know, it's they're not trying to elicit any weird emotion out of you. It's not like, you know, it's not an emotion. It's not a flashback designed to elicit emotion. It's just showing you what happened.
Right.
So we can get more origin on Eleven, which is cool.
Right, exactly.
So Joyce, Bob, Will, and Mike drive into the night. They're looking around. Will offers immediate instructions. Turn right, he shouts. And then they almost slam into Hopper's truck.
Yes, and I like Bob's reaction. He's like, oh, Jim's here, or whatever he says.
Yes, he exactly says that, actually.
It just makes me laugh, because then you remember like, oh yeah, Bob has no clue what they're doing still.
Right. Joyce sees the hole, sees the creepy crawling. Bob sees it now too. So it's at this point where Bob is now in.
Yes.
Bob is in. He knows what's going on, especially since he's going to go down there with them. So Joyce goes down to the tunnel with Bob's help. He's a little bit at first, which any normal person would be.
For sure.
And then she calls for her Hopper. Are we in Will's map? Bob asks.
I like Bob slowly figuring out what's actually going on.
Mm-hmm. How did he know all this? Bob asks. Great question.
Yeah.
They find Hopper's badge. They continue looking. Mike and Will look down into the hole. They stay out, of course. Several vans start to show up. Joyce and Bob continue their trek. They find Hopper. They dig him out. They cut him out. Totally gross. They all take off. Hey, Bob. Hey, Jim. I like that too.
I know. It's really good.
You want to say something here about Joyce's reaction to Hopper? You kind of mentioned it at the top.
Yeah, no, I feel like you still get this.
I think if there are two people who fucked in the past and they're still friends, there's always going to be that connection.
Right. But I mean, I don't.
You think it goes beyond that?
Oh, yeah. Like, the show ends with Hopper and Joyce together in some manner. There's no way that it doesn't.
Poor Bob.
I know, poor Bob. I agree. Just like poor Steve Harrington, okay?
I could see Bob with Mrs. Wheeler. We got to get Mr. Wheeler out of the picture, though.
Well, he's going to go to jail eventually for his crimes. So.
And they find a trunk full of runaway parts. I mean,
she's going to need someone to pick up the pieces, and Bob is the guy to do that, honestly.
Yeah, this was the serial killer heyday, too.
Yeah, oh, for sure. I feel like there really is something between Hopper and Joyce that it just her reaction when they cut him out and when she sees him, it felt like she like, I don't know, she like touches his face. It's very intimate to me. It was Bob kind of off to the side, like, what the fuck's going on? Like, it's just the way that she like touches him and reacts to him is like someone you're very intimate and very familiar with.
You're right. And the show has showed us as much.
And I just like watched it again and I felt the exact, like, she puts her hands on his face and like holds his face and then she moves her hands down and she puts a hand on his like chest when she's like talking.
Lower.
It's so.
Lower.
It's just very familiar.
Mm, I got you.
You know?
And it's been this way, that member of recalling Always. Smoking. I mean, they've obviously been setting this.
Since season one. I've been ready. I've been on this.
Yeah, you have. So anyway, a man with a fucking incinerator unit is down there and he's like, get out. So cool that they're not there to apprehend them and get them in trouble. They're helping.
No. Yes, I like this.
It's a cool unexpected. Dynamic. It's an unexpected thing. Yes. They start opening up with a fucking incinerator and torching it. Will collapses and has a terrifying reaction. This is super scary.
This scares the fucking, and I'm like watching it again right now. I have it on my screen. It's terrifying. It's actually scary. This is like demonic
it's
possession
really
of child scary.
Scary. Yeah,
I don't like it.
The way his mouth is open, I hate it.
I can't imagine.
Poor Mike. Poor Joyce. It's her son.
And that's the thing is that I have like people I like talk to about the show and I talked to a couple of people at work about it who are parents. And when they talk to me and like they react to certain things in like a parental way that, you know, I personally, like I understand looking at this and be like, this is fucking horrifying. Look at this kid. Mm-hmm. And like when I talk to someone that is a parent, they are like beside themselves.
Sure. Of course.
Like I can't even imagine like looking at somebody you love in that specific, like it's really, really fucking scary.
It's super scary. And yes, it goes beyond just like a seizure. There's something otherworldly about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just creepy. The way it looks, the way they shoot it, the way his mouth is agape. I hate it.
It's
creepy.
It's really scary and I don't like it.
But bang, a hard cut to the end of the episode. Awesome. Great cliffhanger.
And this is why I was like, we have to podcast about this tomorrow because I can't wait much longer to watch the next episode.
There you go. So you kind of called it in the beginning when you said a lot of things happen. A lot of information is gleaned. So tell me about your final thoughts for Dig Dug.
I feel like I really like this episode and all of our characters are doing something. Things are happening to them. Things are happening because of them. They're moving in their own directions towards, you know, eventually a conclusion that's going to bring them all together, I assume, you know? I thought this was a really solid episode. I thought it was well-rounded. I have pretty much no major complaints and I cannot wait to see what happens next. I'm so excited to watch the next episode.
Absolutely.
I can't wait.
My final thoughts are going to be a little bit different. I want to talk a little bit about Dig Dug because it's not called Dig Dug by accident. And, the game Dig Dug is to eliminate underground dwelling monsters.
Uh-huh.
That's the objective of Dig Dug. You dig down into the dirt and you do this. And it's cool that the game is referenced. It's cool that the game, in a meta sense, references what they're doing with Hopper and what exactly is going on here with the underground upside down. So pretty cool. We haven't really mentioned that. I just thought I would and point that out to people who might not know much about Dig Dug. But that's why it's called Dig Dug, not just because Mad Max had the high score on Dig Dug, but more importantly, or that they used it as a ploy to have Lucas talk to her, but more because it's referring to what's going on with Hopper, specifically, very, very viscerally, and Will, of course. So boom, motherfuckers, right. There you go. What'd you think of that shit?
Fantastic. Good work, sir.
Yeah, I thought so too. I mean, damn. Do you have anything else you want to say before we get out of here?
No, just I can't wait for the next one, guys. I cannot wait. I cannot wait.
Looking forward to it. All right, I guess we will bid you good people adieu, and we will see you pretty soon with our next recording. And in the meantime, we'll catch you on the flip side. Take it easy.
Bye, friends.
Hey, Matt, pick up.
He's on a train. I am on a train.
I really am on a train.
Dude,
now, now I'm being rude. Hold on.
Dude, you're on the show.
Oh, that's not good.
Fuck, dude.
Why'd you call me?
Fuck, dude. Fuck the people on the train.
Oh my god.
Hey, what'd you think of Dig Dug? Did you
dog shit?
Did you like Dig Dug?
That game sucks, man. Why are you even asking about it?
Wait, what? I said, did you like Dig Dug?
I said that game sucked.
I'm fucking gonna kill you.
Never call Matthew when he's on a train.
I've already watched the next episode, so I can't be on this podcast.
Oh, my God, Matthew. Oh, who do you think you are?
We don't want you on this podcast, so don't get ahead of yourself there, princess.
We just wanted to say hello, okay? God. Yeah.
That's fair.
All right. Don't get your brown shoes dirty when you're walking home later.
I'll eat shit.
Tell all the listeners you said hello.
Hello.
Try it again, except with better sound quality.
Oh, my God. Hello.
Wow. Hey.
I'm the worst.
Hey, you get beat up at work today, buddy? taking your day out on your co-hosts, huh?
Holy shit. Yeah. I'm the worst person.
Hold on. Dude, I got to tell you this really funny thing. Hold on.
Okay.
All right. I just hang up on him.
He was so mad. Why did he answer if he was so mad?
That's the real Matt. He's a total grump.